With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Don't adjust your sets. It's just an hour early, 1 week only, but they're here. It is Doug Oster, everybodygardens.com, Jessica Walliser. Of course, the Organic Gardeners, both part of that great Gaith brand that is triblive.com. You want to phone in with a question? Early bird gets the worm, literally. 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, kdkradio.com, and you can text us on the Red Automotive Line, the best deal in town. 10th caller right now at 412-922-1020 wins a $25 gift certificate from Sorgles. Good morning, Doug and Jess.
Good morning. Doug Oster from Everybody Gardens and the Tribune Review.
And this is horticulturist Jessica Walliser.
Welcome to a special edition, a special early edition of the Organic Gardeners. And Mommy, I don't want to go to school. I'm too tired.
It is. I just said to Brock when I came in the producer's booth, so this is what it feels like to be you guys and have to get up that early.
We've already put four or five in.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's like, oh my gosh, he's here. I am 1 week suffering. You poor souls have many more weeks under your belt.
Oh, so. Well, that's why you make the big bucks. Anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, can I borrow five?
Changing the weather.
How about it?
Yeah, hopefully no flooding, but oh, you know, a slow...
steady
gentle rain for a gardener, and the change in the humidity, it just makes me think about all the things I want to plant now that I couldn't during that heat spell because I didn't go outside.
right. And it actually is, after this rain, you know, when we're through all this, and tomorrow afternoon would be a great time to get some more cool season crops into the vegetable garden, do a late season sowing of lettuce and kale and chard and tatsoi and all kinds of other cold weather crops. Radishes would be great to do this time of year.
You can get away with beets.
You will be
turnip greens.
Yep. Even carrots. You could do some baby carrots, and they stay in the ground for quite a long time until the ground freezes. And you'll be so grateful that you did, because
yeah,
it is really amazing to be able to go out to your garden on Thanksgiving Day,
yep,
and pick lettuce or endive or something like that for a salad. It's really just a wonderful
thing. It's one of the trends in gardening, because now,
yep,
I see that not only are the seeds available, but I see that nurseries are bringing in plants this late in the season for people to put in the garden. And, oh, it is so wonderful. Now, when we get a little colder, I like to protect my stuff. I use a floating row cover, and then I've got some cold frames. Those
mm-hmm.
cold frames are a godsend, I'll tell you. You know, if you have a bad winter, it'll make it in a cold frame, especially
yeah,
something like tatsoi.
Yeah.
And tatsoi, you might not know what tatsoi is, or you might go to the nursery and look at these seeds and say, tatsoi and mustard greens and these other things, you might not know what they are. The only way to know is give them a try. And all these weird greens that I've tried over the years, there's not one that I've said, oh, I can't stand that.
Mm-hmm,
you know, it's,
mm-hmm,
whether it's cress or whatever it is, it's all just kind of a leafy green. And, corn mache.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one.
That's the hardiest one.
Yeah.
That
I
grow.
Get some of that going. I can't wait. This fall planting for me, that it's almost as important as May.
Yep.
You know, this keeps my mind off what's after fall.
The W word, right? And in addition to vegetable gardening, there's lots of other things in the garden that you can be planting right now. Fall, now that we've had this rain, hopefully the temperatures have settled down a little bit. This is the perfect time for planting trees and shrubs and even perennials. And I know that a lot of our local nurseries are running sales on their woody plant material. And man, trees and shrubs, fall planted, you're going to have better success as long as you remember to keep them watered through the winter and then through all next season. You will have a much greater chance of success with fall planted trees and shrubs.
Yeah, that's just the way to do it. You know, just the temperatures, the day length, everything is conducive to root growth as opposed to top growth, and those plants can get established. And I've always had the best luck with fall planting. I do some spring planting, but like you said, that's really too what you got to water all summer long.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you get the right fall, like this kind of fall, if it stays like this,
right,
you won't have to do that much watering and get those things established. And number one thing, know how big that tree's going to get or that shrub's going to get. How many calls do we get where people are like, oh, my hydrangea's out into the walk. I need to, well, if you cut back now, you're going to lose all your flowers. So know how big it's going to get. And the thing that drives Justin and I both crazy, and the guys from Davey Tree, is when you see those trees planted in the wrong place, especially in new construction, and in 5 years, you know they're going to have to come out. The ones by my house that we talk about all the time, Leland Cypress, probably 5-6 years ago, they just, you know, they were planted like 6 inches from the side of the building.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, and they just look awful, and they're not going to make it. They got about 2 years left in them.
At your house?
Across the street where they redid that building.
Yeah.
You know, and we have a fan that is in there, and we commiserate when we look at those trees. The roses are doing good, but we commiserate when we see those trees because they had to be a pretty penny, and they look so tired.
Yeah. Just be careful where you plant, and be careful how you plant as well. I mean, the other thing to pay attention to, when you buy a tree or shrub that's potted this time of year, it may have been in that pot for the entire growing season. And so chances are when you take it out of that pot, the roots are really going to have been, you know, circling around inside the pot. It's going to be extremely what we call pot bound. And it's essential that you loosen up the roots of that tree or shrub or perennial before you put it in the ground. Because if they're left in that little, you know, cylinder shape of the pot, that's where they're going to stay. And you're eventually going to girdle the tree, and those trees aren't going to go out into the surrounding soil. And you're going to end up, you know, if it doesn't die from girdling in 10 years from now, it'll die from drought tomorrow. Because without those roots out to spread, it doesn't get moisture and nutrients.
Don't be gentle.
You got to be. And you know what I use? I use my pruning saw, and I literally cut right through that cylinder of roots. And that's how you're best going to get those roots to be able to spread out into the soil. But only with potted, not with bald and burlap. They're a different ballgame.
I have a lot of spots for trees. I just have to I really want to think about it. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at the places. I'm looking at the spots. I'm going to the nursery. I'm seeing what they have. I want something special. You know, I want something that when you put it in there, it's going to be there for a long, long time. And I want to be able to enjoy it for a long time. Maybe some more paper bark maples. I like those, too. Those would be good in the forest.
All right. Congratulations to Rita of Wexford, winner of that $25 gift certificate to Sorgles. All right, listen, Doug Oster, Jessica Wallace are an hour early today. So if you have a gardening question, all of our lines are open. You'll get immediate access if you give us a call to get that garden question answered, 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com, or you can text us at the Wright Automotive Line, the best deal in town. Biggest notice other than the wet weather, boy, it got a little chilly, didn't it?
Does feel like fall out there.
Yeah. Kind of nice to have a long sleeve shirt on this morning.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was pretty brutal there for a couple of days or a week, actually.
I can't handle that humidity and heat. Yeah. And I know that people will say, well, you'll be complaining about the snow. Well, I'm allowed to. I'm old. So,
so that's the way it goes, huh?
So you're actually raising monarchs.
Yeah.
And that's okay to do. The only thing I don't know anything about it, except that, like, it's okay to do that, and it's a good thing to do, right?
Yes, yeah, yeah, it is. And actually,
how do you get this stuff?
Sure. Well, I had a conversation with Kylie Baumley, who's the author of a really great book. If you want to learn more about monarch butterflies and their epic journey and their natural history, this book by Kylie is called The Monarch, Saving America's Most Loved Butterfly, and it's all about the monarch. I mean, and if you don't know about the monarch, it's the only butterfly and one of the only insects. It's not the only, because there's a couple of others that do a mass migration. So they migrate from all up and down the East Coast, and then there's patches of them on the West Coast as well. They migrate all the way down to Mexico for the winter, and they go to the same overwintering grounds and then fly back up north in the spring. And it's actually the granddaughters or grandchildren of the ones that fly up north in the spring. It's their grandchildren that fly back down. So they a whole generation here happens, and then the next generation knows exactly where to go in Mexico, which is just, I mean, it's just mind-blowing.
Well, wait a minute. The ones that come up
in the spring,
what do?
They lay eggs as they're moving up. So maybe they're going to stop and lay eggs in Georgia or Virginia, right? And then that generation
comes up.
Lays another set of eggs up here, and these caterpillars then are what's called the Methuselah generation, which is the generation now that's going to fly back down to Florida.
You've heard of the greatest generation. This is
the Methuselah generation. Right. Okay. And so they're the ones that are going to go back down to Mexico, which is just like, how do they even know where to go, right? Because it was their grandparents that, I mean, that went the last time. It's just amazing. But anyway, so one of the things that gardeners can do to help is actually learn how to rear the caterpillars inside. Because when the caterpillars are left outside on their host plant, which is only milkweed, they can only eat milkweed. That's it. There's a couple different species of milkweed, but that's their sole host plant for their caterpillars. And you can raise the caterpillars inside by feeding them the same type of milkweed that you found them on. And it helps protect them from predators because the birds love to eat them. They have several predatory insects that eat them.
You would think with those colors that those colors would be a warning color.
And that's what they're intended to be. But however, when they're real young, and they actually absorb in milkweed, there are some compounds that actually make them very distasteful. And they absorb those compounds from the sap in milkweed, and they are held in the caterpillar's body and then also in the adult butterfly, which makes them less welcoming to predators. However, there still are predators that feed on them.
And tell people what the caterpillar looks like.
So the caterpillars are only found on milkweed plants, again, and they are, well, it depends. As they grow, they change, but the bigger ones are the ones that we tend to notice, and they are white and black and sort of a yellow striped. And then they have two little antenna at the front end and two little antenna at the back end. And they're very distinctive, and they're pretty much those and the milkweed tussock moth are the only two types of caterpillars that are found on milkweed plants. But so one of the things that Kylie says in her book is that if you want to help, you can move any caterpillars that you find on your outside plants into a protected site.
You're not moving the eggs. You're just moving.
You can move the eggs as well if you can find the eggs. I mean, the eggs are super tiny.
You wait till the
this
caterpillar?
This year, I just did the caterpillars.
So you take the caterpillar with some milkweed,
yes.
And then where does it go?
And so I have, at first we did them in like a Tupperware bin with a mesh on top so that you could get a good air exchange. Well, it depends on how many caterpillars you're bringing in.
We're talking 6 inches or just like a big giant
in,
one?
If you're just bringing in one, you can just do a little tiny Tupperware. If you're doing 200 of them, then you're going to need a big Tupperware, right? And then as they start to get bigger, they eat a lot of milkweed. So we actually bought on Amazon one of these little butterfly tents. It's just like a mesh tent with a zipper opening that you can raise multiple monarchs in there, caterpillars, and you have to give them fresh milkweed every day. And then when they, it's usually about 10 to 14 days as a caterpillar. Nope. They get all the moisture they need from the milkweed. And then when they're ready to pupate, then they drop off the milkweed and they crawl up onto the top of the tent, and that's where they spin their chrysalis. Oh. Because in the wild, the caterpillars can go between 10 and 65 feet before they build their chrysalis. They don't build their chrysalis on the milkweed plants themselves.
Oh.
So they crawl off the plant, go over to another location, and make their chrysalis there. And then they spend about 10 days or so in the chrysalis, depending on
and
the temperature.
The chrysalis
and stuff.
Is really pretty.
They're beautiful. Aren't they? They're beautiful.
The ones that I've seen,
yeah.
And I don't know all the different stages, but they're green and have this
gold dots and a little gold line
around them. Yeah.
Yep. That's really incredible. And mine, we have 6 right now in chrysalis and 3 that are still caterpillars, but I think that they're going to go into chrysalis soon. So it is exciting. You in Kylie's book, she actually talks about how you can tag them. You can get little sticker tags from Monarch Watch that have a number on them, and they actually track them.
You're going to do all that?
To see, I didn't get the stickers. Next year, I think I would really like to do that.
It goes into its chrysalis.
Mm-hmm.
How long?
It depends on the weather and the temperature, but it's 10 days-ish.
And what's the first thing that you see?
So it gets dark. The chrysalis turns dark, and then it gets clear. So you can actually see the orange butterfly through the clear chrysalis.
How big is the chrysalis? How long is it?
Oh, I'm going to say maybe 3/4 of an inch long.
Wow.
And they're
and that's going to open up to a full-size
and
monarch
that's gonna
butterfly.
Yep. It splits open, and then the monarch comes out, and the wings are all folded up, and then eventually it pumps its blood through the wings, and then they expand fully, and then they fly off. Just a couple of hours for it to really expand. It was cool because I actually posted a video on my Facebook page of the caterpillar turning into a chrysalis. And a lot of people think that the caterpillar spins some kind of cocoon like a moth does. No, the caterpillar's skin cracks open to reveal the chrysalis, which is underneath the skin. So it's shedding its skin like a snake would shed its skin, or like it does every time it passes through one of the 5 stages of being a caterpillar. And that's how the chrysalis becomes, the skin. And I have a video, and that took five minutes.
It like attaches to where it's going to go, mm-hmm. and then it kind of it sheds, and then that's what's left?
Yes. Huh. So it attaches to the top. In this case, it was at the top of this mesh cage that we have. And then it hangs in a J shape for about 24 hours. And then the back of the skin starts to split open, and I have it on video. You can watch it on my Facebook. It is just really cool. Wow. And they kind of twist and spin around until that skin drops off, and then the chrysalis hardens, and there
How
you go.
How long until the butterfly can be released when it does emerge?
Well, you want to make sure it can fully open and close its wings and that it's really moving around in that enclosure before you release it. And you want to release it within 24 hours of it really being able to open and close its wings because it needs to eat right away. You can put some like sugar water in a sponge in there, and it will feed on that for a little bit, but then you do need to
let
it go.
But you just kind of just let it fly away and it's on
Well, actually, it'll sit on your hand, or you get some pictures of it on your nose, right, for a little while first, because it does have to kind of warm up before it can fly away.
Cool.
It's pretty neat.
All right.
Pretty neat process.
You like all these little hand signals I have to give them to kind of say, hey, it's my turn to talk. All right, here we go. Listen.
That flapping your arms, though, is kind of weird.
Thank you very much. Notice I can do just one arm at a time. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to head out to Paris, Pennsylvania, talk to Bill right after we get a quick update from CBS Radio News at the bottom of the hour. Got some other calls coming in. And don't forget, you can join Doug and Jess via the internet, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. And you can text them on the Wright Automotive Line, the best deal in town. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take the 10th caller right now to win our $25 gift certificate from Janoski's at 412-922-1020. In case you're just tuning in and wondering, why are Doug and Jess doing the gardening show in the 6 o'clock hour? Because we have intercom communications programming entitled I'm Listening from 7 a.m. to 9 Eastern. So right now, up until 7, it is the Organic Gardeners, 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. Text us on the Wright Automotive Line, the best deal in town. Here's Bill in Paris up next for Doug and Jess. Good morning.
Good morning. Kind of the old saying, locking the barn door after the horse is gone, but on this late blight, is there anything I could have done? The garden just looked beautiful. All those nice big tomatoes and just no end to how nice it looked. They get up one morning and they look like they've been torched.
Yeah, that's tough. Late blight is the worst thing that can happen to a tomato grower. And so you got black on the plant itself and the tomatoes turn black, is that right?
No, actually the tomato plants just look like you had a torch out there waving it around. The fruit was fine, and lots of it I still get some tomatoes, but the plants, they actually look like they'd still be bearing in December up until it hit, and it just hit overnight, just the brown, and of course, naturally, the leaves go to dying off. I have seen the late blight before, but I don't believe I ever saw it quite like this.
So I'm wondering if you actually have early blight instead of late blight on your tomatoes.
Well, I don't believe so, because the early blight hits down towards the bottom. You see the dots
right on
the leaves, and I use Serenade. I controlled that very well.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there was a period in between that the tomatoes... I never seen nicer plants. They were probably 7-8 foot tall, just loaded with tomatoes and bloom, and looked like the perfect thing.
Well, I wonder. I wonder if perhaps this has happened in my garden before, where the late blight strikes, which does, and Doug describes them as turning black, and that is sort of what they look like—a
black
oozy, mushy,
and black on the stems also.
Yes,
not at all.
Okay.
The fruit looked nice. In other words, what happened is the plant just had to shut down as far as all the tomatoes coming on. I had tomatoes hanging on there, weigh 2.5-3 pounds. Remember, ox hearts, the orange ox hearts, the red ox hearts, and mortgage lifters, beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the black beauty tomatoes, just never end. And I don't let anything like that bother me. It's like any old farmer. That's just part of being a farmer.
And it is, and that's one of the things. I mean, we can chalk a lot of this up to the weather pattern that we had this year. Certainly, if it is late blight, we didn't have a whole lot of reports of late blight this year. There wasn't big announcements coming out of Penn State as there are in other years when we face this pathogen. So I sort of wonder if in your case, Bill, it was a combination of issues as far as preventing this from happening on your plants next year. You know, weather patterns we can't control by any means.
And if that fruit still looks good, if you don't have black on it and it ripens up, it's still good to go.
Right. I would definitely make sure that you clean those plants out of the garden and either burn, bury, or throw them out in the trash. Don't put them in the compost pile and don't leave them in the garden all winter. You can also make sure that you don't have any potatoes that overwinter, because if it is late blight, that pathogen will actually overwinter on potatoes that are in the ground. So make sure those are all dug out. And then next season, make sure that you know, if you're worried about it again, you know, continue with using that Serenade as a preventative measure and cross your fingers for drier weather. I mean, we had a crazy wet spring and all sorts of fungal pathogens strike when you have
tomatoes,
that.
Tomatoes, roses, phlox.
Everything. Everything
crops.
Was subjected to
everything
it this year
that could
sure.
go fungal did go fungal.
Right. It's
what
true.
About raspberries? Let's get to Dan in New Kensington. Dan, good morning. Welcome to KDK Radio.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a very nice harvest of raspberries, but some of them are getting like white spots on them, and I really don't know what that is.
So describe the white spots. Are they mushy? Are they, what do they look like?
The raspberry itself is nice and ripe, but on one side, it seems like where the sun is shining.
Uh-huh. Okay,
and
so,
they just remain white.
Yep, so you probably have a bit of sun scald on there. Because we have had such unusually hot, sunny weather the past 2 weeks or so, that can happen. And it will happen on tomatoes as well sometimes, and even peppers. You'll see that white spot. It'll be kind of shinier. And that is definitely a sun scald issue. Again, it's one of those things. We can't control the weather. Next year will probably be fine. The fall crop is more prone to it than
okay
the spring.
Okay to eat raspberries with sun scald?
Sure, yeah. They taste normal to you, right?
Well, I haven't tasted them because I didn't know what it was.
Well, yeah. Let us know if you eat one and something bad happens.
Be sure to call us back if you. Yeah, no. I mean, if you're touching them and feeling them, and they're nice and firm, and they're not like there's no mushy oozy coming out of them, or there's no sign of spores or a little gray mold or anything on there, they're fine. And if it's consistent across the whole patch, especially on the side of the berry that is exposed to the sun, I feel fairly positive that it's just sun scald.
Yeah, the ones in the shade are doing really well.
Yeah. Yep. Telltale sign. There you go.
Let's take one more before the commercial break. Let's say hi to Pete in Russellton. Hey, Pete, good morning. Welcome to KDK Radio.
Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
A couple quick questions. Actually, the first one's a recommendation about or in regards to monarch butterflies. I planted a plant this year that I never grew before, and it's called Mexican sunflowers.
Mm-hmm.
And they get very big. They're beautiful blossoms. I mean, beautiful, and I've seen just about every kind of butterfly, including the monarch, on these blossoms. They really seem to like that plant. And
did you grow that from seed? Did you grow that from seed, or did you get plants somewhere?
No, I got it at one of the box stores and planted it, you know, from seed, and it germinated easily. And you know, of course, I'll have a million seeds this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great plant. It's worth a million seeds. It's one of the plants you do want a million seeds of.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like I said, I deadhead it. You know, I guess it's just typical of any other plant, you know, keep deadheading it and more blossoms appear. But it's a big plant, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the butterflies, bumblebees, never seen no honeybees on it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you don't see many honeybees anyways. But and now, another quick question to Jessica about these monarchs. I let milkweeds come up in parts of my property and let them grow as like natural. They just come up, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. I let them go. And one area is close to my cement sidewalk. And I've been seeing these for the last couple of weeks. They're about an inch long. They look like a little worm, but they're brightly colored, green, yellow, kind of, you know, really cool looking things. Are they monarchs soon to, or will be monarchs?
Are they, where you said on the walk, are they on the milkweed or where are you finding them?
No, they're crawling on the actual concrete sidewalk.
Well, the monarch butterfly caterpillar is very, very distinctive looking. So if you have access to a smartphone or the internet and you Google monarch caterpillar, you'll see, I mean, there's not much that looks like them. And the little swallowtail butterflies look a little bit like them, but they're a very different host plant. They use like dill and fennel and
carrots.
Yeah,
I figure they're around the milkweed too. They're probably...
Yeah, but you know, the thing about the milkweed caterpillars is they very seldom leave the milkweed except to pupate. Only when they're real big, and when they're fully mature, they're about the size of your pinky finger. So if they're
I've seen
that
them big like that,
yeah. If they're that lately, big though, and they're crawling across your pavement, then they're probably left the milkweed and are going to look for somewhere to build their chrysalis. But if they're smaller than that, it would be real unusual for them to leave the milkweed plant. They usually stay pretty, you know.
If I was you, I would put up a sign that said "Milkweed Crossing" or "Caterpillar
Crossing."
Yeah, monarch crossing.
Yeah, there you go. Without a picture to see exactly what that is, I mean, the stripes on them are real distinctive. If it is a monarch, if you're describing them as being real solid colored, that's not what's going on there.
No, they're multicolored.
They're multicolored.
Actually, kind of pretty, but I've seen a lot of weird caterpillars so late this year.
That's
good. Like real fuzzy, furry looking things, and I don't know what they are.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of different moth species as well, and obviously some are pests. Most are not. The vast majority are not. And so just because you come across a caterpillar on the plant, I'm saying this to everybody, not just him specifically, but just because you see a caterpillar on a plant does not mean that you need to reach for a spray can or squish it. I mean, they exist, and without them, we wouldn't have birds, and we wouldn't have us, so...
All right, special one-hour early edition of The Organic Gardens because of the Intercom Communications programming entitled I'm Listening from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. So let's get right back to the phones. If you'd like to join us, 866-391-1020 or Dollar Bank, instant access, kdkradio.com, or you can text us on the Red Automotive Line, the best deal in town. Here's Brad in Fox Chapel. Hey, Brad, good morning.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good. What's up?
So in the spring, I planted three Norway spruce, maybe about 6 feet, maybe 10 feet apart, and kind of filtered sun. And the one in the middle has died back on the top. I can't figure out why.
Yeah. Were they bald and burlapped when you planted them? Were they containerized?
No, they were big plants. They're bald and burlapped.
Bald and burlapped. Okay. And did you plant them or did you have a landscaper come in and plant them?
A landscaper planted them.
Okay. So a lot of times, and it's you saying it's the top of the plant?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. So sometimes we have what's called needle drop, which is a natural response to transplant shock. When you move a plant that big into a new planting site, a lot of times you will see some signs of transplant shock. But that often tends to be the older needles on towards the center of the plant. When you see like the top dying back like that, that is a major cause for concern. Have you been watering it consistently through the summer?
Well, pretty much. And because it's only one out of the three, that's what has me baffled.
Right. Well, and sometimes it's, if they're on a different level, one hole could, retain more moisture than the other ones do. That one could have a little bit more transplant shock from the way it was dug out of the field, and then it needed more watering than the other two did. You know, that's the issue that I'm thinking about. You have to keep new. I can't stress it enough, and I don't know how much you water and how much you applied at any one time, but it really should be for a plant that large, 6 feet tall, you should be applying probably 10 to 20 gallons of water, every 7 to 10 days through that really hot weather. So hopefully you were irrigating it enough, and hopefully that the company that did the planting for you has a warranty on those plants.
Especially since you've been watering them.
Right. So if you've been watering appropriately, I would say go back to that landscaper and say, hey, I want you to know this one's not doing so hot. I'm willing to let it live through the winter, but I need you to be aware of the issue so that if it's dead in the spring, they should replace it for you. Most of those companies do have that type of warranty.
All right. Thank you for the call. If you'd like to join us, 866-391-1020, Dollar Bank, Instant Access, KDKRadio.com. Got about a minute and a half before the break. So when is it actually human error when it comes to a tree that doesn't work, plant, whatever, or maybe you should consider going back to the nursery?
Well, as long as he's been watering, those other two look fine.
Yeah.
He's giving them the same amount of water. That's a pretty good indication that, you know, he's been doing the right thing.
Right.
So you just got to ask, you know, you just got to go and see. It's not a black and white issue. You know, you just got to see what they say, tell them what you've been doing, and, you know, hopefully it'll work out for the best.
And I think it's a good lesson for folks who do hire someone to do that type of planting to make sure, you know, that the person, you know, has some type of certification or educational background to know that they're actually doing the planting process right. And I don't know that that's the case with this one. I mean, they may have had the best landscaper in Pittsburgh, and you still have plants that fail even when you do everything right.
Plants die.
It happens, right? It happens, especially transplant shock is a big issue. So, you know, in this case, I would say, you know, you just have to go back to them and say, hey, it's not looking so hot.
Here's what happened.
Right.
All right,
exactly.
Short break. Coming back to wrap it up next with Doug and Jess on the Organic Gardeners, KDK Radio. Good morning.
Remember, the Organic Gardeners always aim to create a better place to garden.
And a safer place to live.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.